Got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little Fog Hat?
By Sean Dettori. I haven't heard this one before, Sean.
Yeah, I Googled Fog Hat New Music. Well, I just went to their Wikipedia and went to their one of their later records from 2016 called Under the Influence. Yeah. And this is one of the covers that's on that album.
I like it.
Yeah,
well done. That's the little stuff that Sean Dettori does 100 times a day for the show that people don't notice. But I do.
That's right. Do. Thanks, Dory.
Okay. Oh, you're the best brother. Okay, we got a lot of stuff to get to this hour. We've got a lot of local news. If you are somebody who still believes that the complete economic meltdown, it's not just a shutdown. We got unemployment numbers. We now have the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression. In America, we have 33 million Americans out of work. And if you're still somebody who thinks this government meltdown of the economy is only about health, I think it is barely above health. I beg you to go check out our podcast after we're off the air. Listen to our noon hour. I spent the entire noon hour on this subject. About how Jay Inslee suspended competitive bidding for contracts in the state. And then in a brilliant Seattle Times watchdog piece, they found out that his cousin, Mark Inslee, got pushed to the front of the line to bid on multi-million dollar contracts for a company he worked with, Greater China Industries. We must all bow to Greater China Industries. And it turns out because his pricing was so bad. Hold on. I got a cough. There we go. It turns out because his pricing was so bad that Mark Inslee didn't get the deal. But Jay sent forwarded from his personal email account to the purchasing chain in the state his cousin's email. And Jay noted, "This is my cousin." Wink, wink. And cousin Mark ended up, because other people were concerned about the appearance of impropriety, but he was trying to, you know, make his cousin and his cousin's biz a fortune. And I detailed that, but I detailed so much more. I detailed the vindictive takedown they attempted of Brown Bear Car Wash, which is open today. They opened at 8 o'clock this morning. But I guess Jay Inslee didn't like that they don't donate to Democrat causes. According to my sources, and my sources are not the people at Brown Bear. According to my sources, Jay Inslee does not like that they didn't donate to Democratic causes. And so he vindictively, you know, continued to cost a heritage Seattle company that employs nearly 400 people, all above minimum wage. And he cost them tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. I talked about how Jenny Durkin, you know, they said they had closed 20 miles of Seattle city streets, all because of social distancing. And then they announced now that, oh, those 20 miles of streets we have shut down, that cars will no longer be allowed to drive on, that's going to become permanent. The anti-car zealots have used a health crisis to achieve their goal of trying to force everybody in the city onto mass transit or bicycles. The war on cars is very real. They are using the health crisis. I talked about the Blue Fox Drive-In Theater in Oak Harbor, set to open this weekend. They were going to have a free showing of a Christian faith-based movie. And James Lee said, well, they allow, the owner of the Blue Fox said, they allow these drive-up church services. Certainly we can have people drive up and watch a movie at our drive-in. But at 5 o'clock yesterday, the state of Washington told the Blue Fox, no, that's not going to work out.
Basically, are we closed? Yes, we're closed. Are we closed for good? If this continues on for more than 2 weeks, we cannot financially survive. There's no way. We're a seasonal business. We had a rough winter because the weather stunk. Rained all winter long. Then spring, was coming along, and then we get shut down. So being a seasonal business, you have very few months and very few days that the weather's great for a drive-in movie theater to make enough money to last the next winter. So it's a struggle, and I just can't see, unless we can get open in the next couple weeks, us being able to make enough money to last through the winter again.
And he said, look, it's time to release us a little bit here.
Like I say, he's got to let us grow up and be adults and make decisions. If you're sick, stay at home. Bottom line, if you're high risk, stay at home. I'm not begging people to come to the drive-in or come to the movies, but I'm giving them the option to do that. We need to get out of our homes. Sunshine's good. Outdoor air is good.
Yeah, not if you're Jay Inslee. And, my advice to the Blue Fox, I think their problem was they were showing a Christian faith-based movie for the free showing tonight. If they had said, hey, free showing of Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. Seriously, 100% serious. Do you think Jay Inslee would have shut him down tonight? No way. No way. But Jay gets to pick the winners and the losers. If you don't tithe to the Democratic Party, loser. If you want to do a faith-based movie instead of left-wing propaganda, loser. And then I go through Governor Inslee's economic recovery panel, which is just stacked with labor union leaders and far-left tax hike politicians. It's all a big joke. It's all about public control and not about public health. I've got a piece up at mynorthwest.com if you want to read about it. But if you want a full hour of in-depth detail that backs up everything I'm saying with truth and facts, just check out our podcast as soon as we're off the air. The noon hour today here on the Dory Monson Show. Also getting tons of text messages about catching up with my contacts during COVID. And you know what? You are right. The people who are upset with me, because they said, I can't believe you didn't talk to Jake, producer Jake, about the whistling contest, which was one of my darkest, worst moments ever on the air. Just one day, Jake was whistling in the office. I was whistling. I thought I was a much better whistler. And Jake said, no way, you're not anywhere near the whistler. And I said, okay, let's do an on-air contest. We had a random listener call in, suggest a song. And I knew I was going to out-whistle him. And you're right. I should have talked to him about it. I should have played this clip before now when my worst moment ever on the air.
What's your whistles? Whistler number one, take it away.
Oh, yeah, it was a Beach Boys song.
All right. Whistler number two, your rebuttal. That's not a good start. So what do we do now?
I couldn't whistle. Live on the air. And the thing about it was, I'm so flippin' competitive. I broke out in a massive sweat. I had sweat pouring down my face because I was so furious at myself that I somehow froze in the middle of the whistling contest.
Wait a second. Hold on. Wait, give me a chance here.
Game over. After all that buildup. What a...
Wait. No, wait. Hold on, Brooke.
Wait.
Who's in the wrong key? Wait a second. Hold on. Wait, no, nobody laugh.
Awful.
Nobody laugh. Hold on.
All right. Yeah, let's give it a... Okay, one of us, do it again.
Quiet. Crap.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't.
So anyway, a bunch of listeners said, I can't believe you didn't play that and talk about it. You're right. I should have. So thank you for the horrible memory. Okay, while we're talking about all of this fake government control of all of us in the guise of it's all about public health, there's another story today that this is so unbelievably disturbing. The government is now, and this isn't here in Western Washington, but it's coming. Man, I'm telling you, it is coming. The government is now criminalizing First Amendment free speech in some places. And I know that sounds like hyperbole, but in San Antonio, Texas, the city council unanimously passed a resolution yesterday declaring anybody who uses the term to describe coronavirus, if you use the term China virus, that is now hate speech. By government decree in San Antonio, Texas, a 9-0 vote, they passed a resolution declaring coronavirus-related terms such as the Chinese virus or the Kung Flu virus. That is now considered hate speech and can put you in jail for a long, long time. Now, of course, what's ironic about that is many diseases are named after their place of origin. Lyme disease, that came from Lyme, Connecticut. The Zika virus began in the Zika forest in Uganda. Ebola is named after a river in the Congo. Legionnaire's disease, American Legion Convention in Philadelphia. West Nile virus from the West Nile in Uganda. Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Rocky Mountains. German measles, self-explanatory. MERS, which stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. The Marburg virus from the German city of Marburg. The Spanish flu that ravaged Seattle and the rest of the world. Spain. But now, according to the San Antonio City Council, if you call coronavirus the Chinese virus, you have engaged in hate speech and can be prosecuted, fined, and go to jail. And here's the mayor talking about how proud he is of their anti-hate resolution.
We've seen incidents that are clearly racist in nature all around this country, and we've even seen some incidents here. But this is really about standing in solidarity with all the members of our community.
No, it's not. It's about government using a health crisis to now take away First Amendment constitutional rights of people. I don't use the phrase China flu. I never did. From the very start, I either called it COVID-19 or coronavirus. But I tell you what, if the Seattle City Council passed a similar resolution, that's all I would call it, is what they tell me I cannot call it. Because there's no way I'm going to let the government take away my constitutional rights. And the fact that so many leftist politicians, whether it is, you know, the state of Washington taking away personal private property rights between landlords and tenants and saying you can't evict tenants, right now. So the government has commandeered your private property in San Antonio, Texas. And then, by the way, the government taking your private property without any compensation and without any declaration of a reason and need, that's clearly a constitutional violation. A city council telling somebody who calls coronavirus the China flu. But if you're talking about 1917, can you still call it the Spanish flu? Which is what everybody calls it because that's where it originated. And that's not hate speech. Yeah, and, you know, I talked about how CNN called it the China flu. And then the far left decided, that's racist. And then CNN, oh, yeah, it's racist to call it the China flu. And then they called it coronavirus. And then earlier this week, the Asian giant killer hornets have landed in America. CNN.com. So they can call the hornets Asian, but they can't call the flu Chinese. And, you know, the PC left is driving everybody insane because nobody can make sense of their fake rules. But here's a case where people can go to jail now if they call it the China flu. Is that about public health? Or is this about public control? And then one other thing that's going on here in Seattle. Sound Transit, the most criminally corrupt public agency in the history of the United States of America. And I do not say that lightly. But, and I don't know if people realize this. Peter Rogoff, when he was in the Department of Transportation in the Obama administration, he thought that light rail was a horrible public transport. Now that he's gotten a huge, you know, $300,000 a year salary, now he just lies to everybody about the merits of light rail. But Sound Transit is whining because they are looking at a $600 million budget hole because of coronavirus. Or, if I was in San Antonio, the Chinese flu. But this is unbelievable to me. We got all these families, unemployed, business owners, out of biz, and you're still paying $400, $600, $800 a year for car tabs, and Peter Rogoff, he says, well, we're just going to have to postpone our projects now.
I don't think the issue is if we're going to build the major projects on our agenda, it's when.
He talked to Cairo 7 about this. So I want you to think about this, that, you know, the average family is going to spend more than $100,000 in your lifetime on Sound Transit. I'm not making that figure up. Just look at the $100 billion price tag, divide it by the number of families in the Sound Transit taxing district. Every family is going to spend over $100,000 on Sound Transit. And now they're saying, oh, those projects we said might come in 2025 or 2040. Maybe it'll be 2050. I mean, not even after we're dead. It'll be after our kids are dead now that we're wasting $100,000.
We can't depend on there being further federal relief. We will then have to phase back our construction program, back those construction jobs.
This week.
Yeah, we're just not giving them enough money. That's Cairo 7 that talked to Peter Rogoff, the head of the most criminally corrupt public agency in the United States of America. All right, that's your big lead this hour. We're going to check the news for you. Jay Inslee is supposed to have a press conference. I know, I would rather hear me talk too, but we'll carry it for you live. That should be coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Lucky, lucky, lucky you. Jay Inslee appears to be running late for his 2:30 press conference. So we're going to try to get in our favorite sound bites of the week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
Hey, Sean, I told you I was only going to have two, but you okay if I do three here?
Oh, yeah, that's fine, Dory.
Okay, I know. I was talking to Sean right before we went on the air. And then I called an audible, like the finest quarterback in the league. At number three, people freaked out earlier this week because Donald Trump compared himself to Abraham Lincoln when he was talking about how much the press hates him.
Number three.
Look, I am greeted with a hostile press, the likes of which no president has ever seen. The closest would be that gentleman right up there. They always said Lincoln. Nobody got treated worse than Lincoln. I believe I am treated worse.
CNN.com. Trump, stop comparing yourself to Lincoln. MSNBC. Donald Trump makes outrageous comparison to Abraham Lincoln. Funny thing. I found a little six-second soundbite, and I didn't see anybody in the media freak out when another president compared his press coverage to that of Lincoln.
I mean, those guys were tough. Lincoln, they used to talk about him almost as bad as they talk about me.
Huh. And there was no media freak out? When Trump says something, it's just absolute hysteria in the media. When Obama said the exact same thing, nothing. Total silence. By the way, with Lincoln, I'm trying to remember, did the Williamsburg Times have a story about the French prostitutes who urinated on him? Did they do fake stories like that about Lincoln? I don't know. Williamsburg Times is not available. Their 1860 edition online. At number two, Earl Thomas. Oh, Earl, the former Seahawk. Oh, just I'm in the middle of awesome audio. Looks like Jay Inslee's just stepping up. Are we ready to go to Olympia, Sean, if I toss to the gun?
Not quite yet. I'm watching the TV, the websites, and so far I don't see Inslee at the at the podium. Oh,
my TV, he's talking right now. Yeah.
That is, okay. I have him on the TV actually right now.
Okay. Again, so, I'm going to apologize to my listeners because, as I said before the break, I also would much rather hear me than Jay Inslee, but we have a public duty, and so we take you to Olympia live here on the Dory Monson Show.
Ready whenever you are, Governor. We ready? Good afternoon. I hope many people enjoyed the inspirational sight that I had. I was out just enjoying a moment, sun, a couple hours ago, and I saw the flyby by two C-17 cargo planes honoring our healthcare workers. And it was a sight to see those really big cargo planes just a few hundred feet above the Capitol Dome. And I think that they were a visual symbol of what we all feel about our healthcare workers right now. We know we've known many heroes wearing camo, but today we're seeing thousands of heroes wearing scrubs and masks taking care of our loved ones in very difficult situations. And I know we all share that a heartfelt commitment to do right by them in a lot of different ways, including to continue our commitment to take care of our loved ones. We know a lot of people today or next few days going to be missing their mothers. Some have been lost to COVID-19. Some we won't be able to hug on that particular day. And we know their kids and grandkids are going to miss them. And I hope that you're going to enjoy the day in some other different way, one way or another, and that we will be back to those days of hugging our moms sooner rather than later. It is, I think, really notable to understand that we are making progress on this fight. And when you're in the fight, it's good to know you're making progress. And we are doing that in the state of Washington. And the fact that we are making progress is not an accident. It's not some sort of just sort of lucky coincidence. We're making progress because millions of Washingtonians have committed themselves to taking care of their health and the health of their loved ones and the health of the community. And they've done that by making some really hard personal decisions. And I think we should all honor them and thank them for that. Now, as a result of those commitments, we are beginning to be able to open up our economy. Two weekends ago, we opened up existing construction. Last week, we opened up many forms of outdoor recreation. We then also allowed additional non-emergent surgeries so people can get taken care of and hospitals can continue to have that revenue stream. This week, we went further in phase one. We've released safety and health requirements to allow more activities, to allow drive-in religious services, to allow auto and vessel sales and car washes, and of course all of our essential businesses that were already open. We have more coming out today under phase two. We are issuing guidances to allow curbside retail sales to move forward and landscaping. And I'm pleased we've been able to do that in fairly short order to get those protocols in place. I want to thank people who have helped us do that. Both working people and business owners have been working with us to get those protocols in place. I had a discussion with 40 business leaders today about this, and we want to continue that success to have safety protocols in place. I'm joined today by our External Relations Director, Nick Strewley. He can answer more questions about those protocols later in our discussion. Now, we have also received applications to go to the next step in phase two, from a variety of counties, from smaller counties that have had no cases in the last 3 weeks. And today, Secretary of Health John Wiesman approved variants for five counties, Ponderay, Lincoln, Ferry, Garfield, and Columbia. And others are now getting a little bit further review, Skamania, Kittitas, and Wakayakum. And again, in making these decisions, we're using science and data and the best information we can get from these counties to make sure that they are ready to reopen. And we're really pleased that we've started this first step. We assume other counties will follow, and we will continue to use criteria based on science. We started with the smaller counties because we want to have good experience with them to give us confidence to move out to additional counties. Again, I want to thank Secretary Wiesman and his team for hard work on this so we can continue to make progress. There is something I want to share with people that is a concern of ours. We are hearing increasing reports that people are delaying appropriate health care because of COVID-19, and we're concerned about that. We want people to get health care they need. We're particularly concerned that it appears that immunization rates may have gone down in various places, as much as 30% in some circumstances compared to what 18-year-olds were having in March 2019. We really need our children to be vaccinated. We can't let one virus result in fewer children being protected against other very dangerous diseases, and I hope people will take care of their children. You know, some people have said that their issues aren't serious enough to bother healthcare workers in light of COVID-19, but we all need to stay healthy. So please don't delay appropriate treatment for chronic conditions or new injuries or troubling symptoms. And our healthcare system now is stronger than it was a few months ago in a lot of different ways, and we appreciate everybody in the healthcare system working to make it so. Now, we know this weekend is going to be unbelievably gorgeous in the state of Washington, and under normal circumstances, that would be only a cause for celebration. But with COVID-19 lurking, we do have to hope people will both enjoy an amazing weekend and do it in a way that keeps themselves and their loved ones safe. As you know, we've opened up a more outdoor recreation, and it means more people will be out. So however you recreate, we hope that you're going to find a way to protect yourself and your loved ones, just kind of showing good trail etiquette. You know, you can avoid crowds and being close to people who aren't in your household. If we practice social distancing, which, by the way, I've seen when I've been out in a little trail, people have been stepping off the trail to watch out for each other, and I think that's a good thing. I hope it'll continue. You know, just a comment of where we are in this challenge. We are in, I think, maybe the hardest place in the course of this disease. And it's hardest because we've had some sort of early victories against this virus. And now's the point where it would be really easy for us to let up in our efforts. But I really don't believe that in Washington we should snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, and I don't believe that we will. We want a full economic recovery. And that's why we don't want to have to do this twice. We want to do this right once rather than put everybody through this a second time later in the year. And when I think about this, if you know, mountain climbers have what's called the crux move. It's kind of the hardest move that they make during a climb. And I think this is the crux move in this effort because it's the most difficult, it's the most challenging, the most dangerous if we kind of fall off our route. And we know what is at stake. I wake up every morning thinking of the people that whose lives have already been lost, and importantly, their families. People like 44-year-old Thomas Lopez. He worked at his family's taco truck in Seattle's South Lake Union. He died from COVID on April 2nd. Folks like 59-year-old Metro driver Samina Hamid. She died in April after contracting the virus. We've heard about how much the riders of her bus and her friends and her family and her Doberman Sophie are missing her dearly. And it reminds me that the losses are not only to those who lose their lives, it's we who lose our friends. A 60-year-old butcher, Guadalupe Oliveira of Pasco, he worked at the Tyson's beef plant in Wallula. He spent 10 days in ICU without being able to see his wife and seven children during that period of time. And we know how tough this is on people who are ill and their families having to be disconnected while they're struggling. People like 97-year-old Bill Chambers. He fought for his country in World War II and lost his life to COVID in Kirkland in March. They all are stories of why we are in this together. And these people and their memories and their families, I believe, are worth fighting for and working for and honoring. And I'm very proud of our state for the work we're doing in that regard right now. Now, I wanted to report to you sort of the status of the virus at the moment and how we're using the data about this virus to make our decisions. As I've talked about before, we have seen progress in fighting against this virus. But I am very concerned about the situation we're in today, despite that progress, because we just are in a very precarious situation. We're sort of poised on that knife edge of whether we're going to really wrestle this all the way to the ground. I met with the modelers. We have some of the best modelers in the world. The world actually is looking to the modelers, the statisticians, the epidemiologists, who have modeled this disease and try to give us the best prediction they can of what's coming around the corner. And I just wanted to share with you some of the most, I think, insightful and important data in the state of Washington today. I'll show you a graph they showed to me this morning that I think is one we all ought to take a look at. This shows the COVID-19 reproductive number. It's RE, or sometimes called R-naught. One for Eastern Washington and one for Western Washington. And the RE number basically is the number of people that one person infects. So if the RE number is 3, it means the person is infecting 3 other people. If it's 2, the person is infecting 2 other people. And it's 1, that means that each person infects one more person. So if it's 1, essentially you continue to have the same rate of infection of the number of people who are infected and the number of people who will lose their lives. You'll see on the left, when this started, the number was just above 3, both in Eastern Washington in the red line and Western Washington in the purple line. Because of the work Washingtonians have done, both numbers have taken a very sharp decline over time and reached a bottom in early April. But unfortunately, as you'll see, both lines, the red line has plateaued or has just gone up in the last week or two, and the purple line has gone up, so now it is maybe one, and the red line in eastern Washington is above one. And unfortunately, these data stop on April 19th, and if the trend has continued, and we'll see this in a week or two, both of those numbers are going to be above one. And what that means is the number of people who will be infected and the number of people who will lose their lives is going to rise again in the state of Washington unless we find some other measure to restrain the rate of the infection. So this is very a challenging moment for us where we just cannot allow that line to go significantly above one, or we will simply again see an exponential growth. I'll see a second slide again. This is from the Institute of Disease Modeling here in the state of Washington. It's a little complicated, but if you can just take a look at this, you see these dots indicate data points, and they have shown sort of an average of those, that the curve went up. These are the number of infections daily that we've had over time. And you'll see we think we met the peak around just before the end of March. And again, because of the work we've been doing, some of those data points have trended down. And the green line in the middle shows what is predicted to happen if we maintain our existing R numbers. That means if we maintain the ability to restrain the growth of the virus. But the gray line, which starts to go up dramatically, shows what will happen if we go back to an R number of mid-March levels that we already were experiencing. And that's what will happen if we abandon our social distancing strategy and could not find some other substitute for that strategy that was effective. So this is what concerns us, and this is what shows that we have to continue a step-by-step, measured approach based on data that we are engaged with now. And again, I want to thank everyone who is committing themselves to rational decision-making here because of this data. I want to give you just a little report about our supply situation. Our state, as you know, has faced very significant shortfalls in our collection kits that are used to take a sample from your nose before they go to an analytical lab to analyze them. After repeated calls to the administration, both by myself and many other governors of both parties, to support states in building a strong system, we have now received our first significant shipment from the federal government of collection materials. That included 37,000 swabs of a particular type that are suitable for this collection gathering. We've been told we will be receiving another 60,000 by early next week, followed by weekly shipments of more than 100,000 swabs. This is really good news, and we appreciate that this is coming in. But we have to increase the level of this supply because as we come out of this and reopen our economy, we will have even more need for more testing as people go back to school and people go back to work so that we can prevent the necessity of shutting down businesses. So this remains a challenge for us, and we are trying to find the most creative solutions to it. A week or so ago, maybe a little longer, I spoke with the Food and Drug Administration commissioner and also sent a letter to the vice president asking them to do the scientific work necessary to validate at-home testing. So you could essentially test yourself, put the swab, and get it delivered to a lab to analyze. And today we're pleased that the FDA has announced that they will evaluate new tests for an at-home collection system. We think this would be great if we can make it part of our testing protocol. Because as our social distancing strategy is reduced, we have to have the most robust testing, contact tracing, and isolation program we can possibly mount. We'll have more to say about that next week. But it all starts with adequate testing. One last piece of good news, thanks to the State Department of Commerce and the State Broadband Office, more than 300 new drive-in Wi-Fi hotspots are going up statewide. And I'm glad that initiative is happening right now. As you know, we had a broadband initiative the legislature acted on, and this is very, very timely. You can learn more about the hotspots at www.driveinwifi.wa.gov. www.driveinwifi.wa.gov. And with that, I'm happy to stand for questions.
Governor, the Seattle Police Department posted a note today about, looks like, potentially widespread fraud attempts for Employment Security Department, people requesting unemployment benefits that are not real. Is your administration working on a response to make sure that that is limited and not happening?
Yes, it is one of the challenges that our department has. And it is an important part to do what we can to weed out fraud. And those folks are going to be in a particularly hot place when they are caught and convicted. We take that as a very, very serious crime in the middle of a pandemic for people who would be so irresponsible. So let it be known, those folks are going to be treated with minimal respect in the criminal justice system. And we'll do everything we can to find them. Now, if I can, let me note, though, this challenge of weeding out fraud is extremely challenging for us because we also want to get the thousands of claims processed for people as soon as humanly possible. And we are bending every single resource and technology the department can to expedite those decisions. We know people are waiting for this and their very difficult financial position, and we hear that, we feel it, and we're just running as fast as the department can to beef up the resources so that these things can be expedited. I will say it's really helpful to get your claim processed quicker to try to be as careful as humanly possible on the information, on the boxes you check, on the information. It really helps to triple check it. Because what we're finding is there's a lot of sort of just innocent mistakes people make, and that delays the ability to get checks to them. So we hope people can sort of get somebody to look over your shoulder and make sure everything's filled out right. We want to get those checks to the right people as soon as humanly possible.
Next question comes from Steve. Governor, you said people, when they go back to school, do you expect schools to resume in the fall, and is there a possibility they could resume before the end of the school year? Demonstrators across the Oval who are demanding that.
Well, we obviously want that to happen this fall. I think there's a real good reason to believe it can happen this fall. It's dependent on a part on what we do here in May. I mean, the more people that honor social distancing, the more people that find a way to go about their day's life without infecting others, the more likely it will be that we can open school in the fall. So this is an unknowable answer to this question, but the one thing we know is that we do have a big impact. We control this destiny to some not insignificant way to get ahead of this virus, and so we can't open schools. And I encourage people to keep that in mind, you know, as we go forward. I think I don't see there's no discussion that I'm aware of about the possibility of opening up on-site school before September, or maybe there might be some schools that start in August, certainly some colleges, that I'm aware of. And we want to thank the educators and the parents who have been as creative as possible the last several weeks with their children. I've actually heard some pretty decent reports about students who've remained committed, and that's been kind of inspiring. We know it's not as good as on-site. It's not as good as having those in person. And I want to thank the educators finding the creative juices to do everything we can right now.
You're listening to Jay Inslee's live press conference in Olympia. I'll have a complete breakdown of this Monday at high noon. When he is done, Tom Curley will take it over from here. This is going to be a gorgeous weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Take care. God bless you in these crazy times, and I will see you back here Monday, high noon.
Happy Mother's Day to you too, Dory. Happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
reimpose restrictions.
Nick, would you like to address the curbside issue? Are you with us, Nick, and not muted? I'm sorry? We're just looking for Nick for a moment. He's out opening retail stores, I think. We're having a little technological difficulty here. I will try to get a more specific answer, but basically we have issued today protocols for retail businesses so they know the guidance of how to go about doing this. We want to thank the business leaders who've worked to try to establish meaningful mechanisms. We're seeing some really good things in our retail establishments of use of plexiglass and distancing and masks and gloves. We really appreciate that. So I'll get you the more specific guidance to everybody on this call. We'll get Nick, and if we get him, let me know if we get Nick a little later so he can add on. The R naught number, I don't have information. The number that I showed you on the graph was I believe, for King County, as I recall. Let's make sure that we can look at this graph. Well, excuse me, I misspoke. The blue line is for Western Washington, west of the Cascades. The red line is counties east of the Cascades. I really don't know if there's a significant difference in that R number. It would not shock me that there is a difference between Seattle and Forks, and that's one of the reasons we're looking at some potential reopening of some additional counties if we continue to have success in some of these more sparsely populated and less heavily impacted counties. That's what we're going to be looking at in the next couple of weeks.
Hello, yeah, this is Deborah. Echo window, so let me get rid of one. If I can, okay. So, Governor,
are you still here? Yes.
All right. So, Governor, the question that I have is, I was at the news conference that Tim Iman and several Republicans held today. They, it's the third lawsuit that they say they have filed against you, and they need the courts to tell you what they say you will not do, and that is to end the emergency declaration, the third lawsuit, and still you are standing where you are. What is your response to that?
We are going to continue to make rational, science-based decisions with both the health of our persons and the health of our economy in mind. And what we know that if we are going to have a healthy economy, we cannot allow this COVID to continue to have massive fatalities in our state. And we are not going to want to go through this twice. So we will not be intimidated by these folks. In our system, anyone can file a lawsuit, and it looks like anyone has. So I feel good and confident about our position. It is biologically nonsense to try to endanger Washingtonians right now, which would be a clear and present danger. And frankly, it's from a human standpoint, it's just heartless. On Mother's Day, to be suggesting we should expose our mothers to this virus unnecessarily. So we're going to continue to listen to people. We're going to continue on this step-by-step approach. We have listened to a lot of people, including some of the Republicans, who have given us some insights and critiques, and that is why we have opened up construction, non-emergency surgery, retail for curbside service, automobile sales, outdoor recreation, golf courses. We are making progress, is my point, but a willy-nilly abandonment of the health of our people, we're not going in that direction. Yeah, Nick, did you want to add anything to the curbside protocols? Nick Strulli.
Yeah, introduce yourself.
I'd be happy to, Governor. Thank you. My name is Nick Strulli. I am the External Relations Director for the Governor. And related to curbside pickup for retail, that guidance will be posted later today, and it will be effective immediately. So as soon as a retail business can comply with the requirements laid out, they'll be able to start business back up again. Specifically, I think you had a question related to how a mall-based business would operate curbside pickup. And the general concept under our guidance would be that they would need to go through the mall and out to the curb through the front entrance of a mall or that sort of a retail exchange. So that's how that would work.
Hi, Governor. We've heard businesses that struggle with the process of waiting for these industry-specific guidelines. Could you speak to not only how difficult it can be to coordinate with all those industry heads to get these policies going, but at the same time, how important it is to have industry-specific health guidelines?
Well, we have tried to listen to business leaders and working people in fashioning these, and I think we've got really good protocols. I've heard broad acceptance of them, that they think they're very workable. I had a discussion today with 40 business leaders in our state, and it was a very collegial discussion because people think we've been able to work together to fashion some protocols that really do work, most recently in the construction industry. We worked together and had a 30-point program working with the industry to try to come up with something that worked so we could build houses and provide safety for the workers and their families, and had a really good success on that. And that's a success because we listened to people in the real world to understand what their lives are really like and what rules might make sense. So I'm looking forward to continued success on that. I have to tell you, I know there's huge frustration on this of business people, enormously frustrating. But I've been really pleased at leaders working together to figure out the way forward on here, and I appreciate their help.
Next question comes from Hi, Governor. I am just wondering if someone can talk, some of the safety guidance that has come out specifically for car washes requires a log of some sort for people who that come in to be able to track them down. And I'm hearing from some people who are concerned about that, so I was wondering if someone could explain that. And then also, there's a report out today regarding some steps that you took to get some PPE back in the height of this epidemic that led to some today to accuse you of nepotism, corruption. I wonder if you can speak to that and what lengths you did go to back when you needed that PPE for the state.
Well, we have a technical term here in Olympia for that. That's called baloney. I have been, I tell you, just every hour I think about trying to get PPE for our nurses. When those C-17s flew over today to honor the nurses, I've been trying to honor them by getting PPE every single day. I've called around the world for this, and we have found some and not as much as we would like. I have asked the president to pitch in, and he has refused to do though early, but now the administration is starting to open up that supply chain, and for that, we are appreciative. And I have looked for every single possible lead anywhere in the world to get this for our nurses, and I will continue to do that. Now, your first question is, Nick, do you want to take that one?
Absolutely. So again, Nick Struli, External Relations Director for the Governor. The visitor log is a requirement that you'll see. It's in the construction guidance. It was in the car wash guidance. You'll see it in some of the other guidance we're releasing later today. And it's incredibly important as we begin to stand up the contact tracing to be able to make sure that as transmissions happen or hotspots occur, we are able to track those folks down and make sure we minimize the spread as business activities come back online. So that's something that the Department of Health recommended, and most of the industries we've spoken with feel like that's a good approach.
Governor, I'm wondering if you can tell us that as you prepare the criteria for other counties or regions to move ahead to phase two, can you tell officials in those larger counties whether they will need to go to 3 weeks without a new COVID-19 case as the smaller counties do? And sort of as a corollary to that, can you get a county-by-county breakdown of those R-naught numbers so you can tell in regions where the transmission rate is much lower than some other pockets?
Yes. We're asking our modelers to see if they can provide more specific R-naught numbers. We don't know whether that really is going to be capable to do or not. It would be very useful if we had that. We will be, in the next couple of weeks, looking at counties, because we anticipate there will be some other counties that would like to go this route early, and we may change the criteria. We wanted to start in a cautious way with the smaller counties first, and we may look at a more per capita criteria moving forward. And the criteria we select is going to be based on this data that we receive on a daily basis to figure out what the right route is. And we'll be very transparent about that. And we're listening to people all over the state. I've had many discussions across the state with local leaders talking about how to select that. And that'll be an iterative process. It's not etched in the tablets that came down with Moses. It's going to be something that's based on the data as it moves forward. By the way, I do want to address this because it is one of the challenges of our decision-making process. It would just be so wonderful if anyone could just give a specific date and a specific number a month from now what this situation is going to look like. But I don't think that would really be responsible. It would be easy and perhaps gratifying, but it would not be responsible given how fluid and dangerous and slippery this virus is. It has surprised people in many places around the world. And as we've seen here, even we have now had some early success. But as the graph showed you, there are concerns about this starting to grow back. So we're doing the best we can in the most transparent way we can.
Yes, Governor, regarding some of the lawsuits that have been filed, it seems many of them are coming from members of the Republican Party, though to my knowledge, none of them have included Republican leadership in the legislature. How have the ongoing discussions, or have you had ongoing discussions with the Republican leadership? And as a follow-up to that, why not call the legislature back into session? Because there's been a lot of criticism whether or not you have the authority to do certain things. Why not call the legislature back into session, have them ratify these decisions? I know you floated the idea of a session last week.
Well, this is a responsibility given to the governor in an emergency situation, which this clearly is, and it's by necessity the way we have to make decisions in our democracy, and it's like this in 50 other states. And it's the same reason that none of the other 50 states have convened, I don't believe, a special session for this reason, because it's your only way really to fashion in a very quick time period a response to an emergency. That's why they set this democracy up like that. To my knowledge, none of the leadership in the Republican Party have called for a special session, nor have they proposed an alternative plan. And I just got to tell you, the old saying about Monday morning quarterback kind of applies here a little bit. Look, I understand criticism. I understand different viewpoints. But the only thing I've seen is just abject surrender to this virus. And that's just not acceptable for the safety of our people. We've had four Republican legislators, maybe it's five, say, let's just surrender. Let's just give up and let this virus come back and eat us alive. That is just not a plan that is responsible in my view. So maybe the reason they have not asked for a special session is they're afraid to be the dog that caught the car. When you have to make decisions, it gets a little harder. So we're going to continue to work with Republicans. We brief them every week. We have very detailed briefing of the entire legislature, Republicans and Democrats. I have talked to Republican leaders and will continue to do so because we are all in this soup together. It's not Republicans or Democrats that virus is thinking of. It's thinking of us all as targets. And I look forward to working with both parties to get something done.
Time for a couple more questions. Next question comes from Jasmine with KMVU. Governor Inslee, this is in regards to the stay-at-home violator list. We understand contact information of reporting parties are being circulated in email for us.
We lost you there for a moment. We've lost you for a moment. We'll try to come back. Please stay with us. Who is this? I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, Governor. I know you talked about how important contact tracing is
you talk about what that's going to really look like across the state and all the counties, and if you think we have enough resources to be going on with that now, as well as how soon it'll start?
This is, at the moment, maybe the most important thing in our state, and that is our ability to have a vigorous, robust, timely testing, contact tracing, and isolation a plan across the state of Washington, and we are committed to that. We're going to have a much more detailed review with you either Monday afternoon or Tuesday, I believe. I believe it's going to be Tuesday to roll out that plan, exactly what it will look like. It's going to involve hundreds of members of the Washington National Guard, members of the Department of Licensing, local Department of Health, and state departments of health working all in unison. And we're going to continue to build from there. I'm glad we've been on top of this because this is extremely important. I'll mention one thing about that plan, if I may, because I think it's going to be becoming increasingly important. And that is that we want to do the testing, which is step one. We want to do the contact tracing, which is step two, to contact people who may have been infected. But the third is isolation. And I just today want to mention this today. We are going to have a lot of families that will need to isolate for 14 days when it turns out that they're positive. And even before they're tested, we're going to need people to isolate while you're waiting to get the test returns back. And this is going to be really challenging for some families, and we're going to have to help them and support them. Because when a person is positive, if they decide to isolate at home rather than in another location that the state may provide, they obviously have a high level of transmission to their household members. So that means household members are going to have to isolate with them at home. And our success in this endeavor, our ability to avoid this pain again, to a large degree is going to depend on those families' success and willingness and the ability of us all to help those families so that they're secure for 14 days in their homes. That means not trips to the grocery store and trips to families' houses. So that's going to be a challenge for us, and I hope we're all going to help those families. No, again, I want to thank everyone. I hope you'll be safe this weekend, and please wash your hands.